From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, March 27th, 2012. Each week this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
There are many proponents of data sharing, including the current U.S. President. But questions still linger about how best to deliver those data. Should organizations provide APIs? Or bulk data downloads, or both? And does what work for other kinds of data work as well for geodata? We'll look at these questions after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Intergraph, bringing you truly integrated GIS and image processing from a single organization. Is your GIS at a gridlock, limited to a few, contained and locked away? Between those working with a heavy and hard-to-use desktop GIS and a static, lightweight browser-based GIS exists a large potential user base. GeoMedia Smart Client makes your organization progressive, engaging individuals and departments to collectively ignite your dynamic GIS. Geographic changes are easily and interactively implemented across an enterprise-wide smart GIS, seamlessly integrating into configurable workflows. Users leverage advanced geospatial functionality via simple-to-use map-based tools, streamlining their processes and honing their expertise to build a smart GIS. To learn more, visit intergraph.com/geospatial.
Well, last week, Peter Krantz wrote an article titled, "Publishing Open Data, Do You Really Need an API?" And he starts the post with a story of a government weather agency which provides its data via a simple API. There are actually three different calls you can make to the API. And what happens is that between 7 and 8 in the morning, the servers get totally blasted. They're just getting hammered. And then everything calms down. And it turns out that a clever developer has built an application that wakes up its users with an announcement about what the weather is going to be where they are. And for each one of those users, the application makes two calls via the API. And he uses that story to sort of start talking about the drawbacks of having an API if you're trying to provide data. And he identifies four of them. One is that if you put out the API and you invite developers to use it, they are going to in fact use it, and it's going to become a critical part of their applications, just like it did in the example. And that can be a problem if you have one and only one server. Because if somebody starts hammering it, other people are not going to have access to it. The third issue is that if external people start banging on your server, that means those who are using the API internally are going to get slowed down. And the final issue that he raises is that when you put together an API like this, you're basing it on how, in theory, you expect developers to use it. And the problem is that you don't really know how developers are going to use it until they start using it. So that's sort of his starting point. And what he suggests is that those limitations and others make an alternative a much better choice. And that alternative is, of course, making the data available for download. And here's how he describes that. In this model, data from the database is exported, transformed to an open readable format, for example, CSV, properly named and stored on the web server. This means entrepreneurs can get all your data, load it onto their own system, and design their API according to their use case. Also, high loads will hit their own infrastructure without affecting other apps. So that's his alternative. And he suggests that there are situations where APIs might be a better choice. And in particular, he points to real-time data, data that's changing quite a lot, collaborative processes, and so forth. And he's going to write future articles on that. So, Joe, what was your reaction to this set of scenarios and how data might be shared via API or via download?
Yeah, the easy answer is that it certainly depends on the application and the data both. And that's, you know, that's something to be filtered out through whoever the developer is going to be. The other thing is, I think, important to consider is data, and is geospatial data in particular, is it unique? In the way that it's delivered. to some degree, you could argue that the geospatial data, in particular government data, is now becoming such a large part of the information infrastructure that it's more critical than ever than to try to identify how that data is best delivered, what's more cost-effective, what's going to be best used. And I think Krantz's article does a marvelous job of highlighting some of the impact that developers must consider. But it brings it into the sort of the light whether geospatial is unique in this way.
Okay, well, let's follow up on that geospatial sort of thread, and let me get sort of what I consider to be sort of a response article. And this came from the Sunlight Foundation, and the director of Sunlight Labs, Tom Lee, made some statements about APIs that I'm going to quote. "My sense is that APIs are great, but except for a very few cases, they should be adjuncts to bulk downloads, not substitutes. In particular, it may be appropriate to offer an API when the system's source data changes very rapidly," I would put this at faster than daily, "making staleness a concern, or when manipulating the data requires technical capabilities sufficiently advanced as to exclude many potential users of the information." And he goes on. "One example of this might be a data set with very large storage requirements. Another is GIS data, where users need to know something about setting up the associated tool chain to use the source data. An API can make this information accessible for those who just need to query a bunch of lat-long pairs to see what comes back." So he argues that actually GIS data may be a good situation to, in fact, have an API versus just the raw data for download.
Yeah, and the question that came up with this is that, is GIS data too complex for the average developer, I guess that's what he was targeting, to use, such that you need an API? His argument that an API somewhat constricts your use and application because you think you know the best way that it should be used rather than providing it as bulk data. Sunlight, Tom Lee makes that argument that, hey, you should provide both. One is an adjunct to the other, as you said. And that, I think, is it's a wise approach. It may not be the full answer, but it's one of those approaches that you got to take into consideration.
Right. And he does actually, in summary, Sunlight argues that Sunlight is, in fact, pro-API. However, the first step government should take in nearly all cases is to offer the data directly and in bulk. They'll save themselves mountains of hassle, will better and more quickly serve entrepreneurs and developers, and will encourage the broadest possible use of their data by the public.
And if you go to data.gov, where you can theoretically download bulk data, you'll find that it comes in a variety of formats, right? Even there, right? You can download it as CSV. You can download it as ESRI. You can download it as KML or KMZ. And just exploring a little bit further on data.gov, I was really fascinated to see what it is that they do deliver. To me, that's the place where you got to kind of figure, you know, where you start. And it immediately brings into the question, well, what do I do with this stuff? Do I have an ESRI technology to be able to read it? That can be as constricting as anything else.
Well, except those are all open, published formats. One's even a standard. A developer could certainly figure out how to take advantage of that data.
Mm-hmm.
Now, regular people, if they wanted to see a map and there was no map, that would like freak them out. But I think data.gov, part of what's going on now is to try to turn that raw data into valuable apps so that you can at least look at it. And maybe that's not such a bad thing, to have that raw data out there, and then the private sector or the nonprofit sector can take that data and turn it into applications for the non-programmer. That makes more jobs. That sounds great.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably one of the best arguments for having that bulk loaded data. Getting beyond the technical issue of hitting servers and bringing servers to their knees, getting the data out there and making it visible, making it accessible, I think is the biggest issue. I think there are loads of data that aren't yet made available. And how you publish it is one thing, but I was just struck by the fact when you go to data.gov that it's not all there yet. We're making progress. Given that argument, given that it's not all there yet, I think at this point probably the use of APIs is one of those things that you almost have to do. I think developers will certainly love to take the raw data. I think the average person, as you suggested, certainly needs a little bit more assistance, and that's where the APIs come in.
Right. Well, and that does really point out that even just getting the data cleaned up with some metadata, with some intelligently named files, is not trivial. That's still a lot of work. And then if you add on to that, how do we craft a meaningful API for this set of data that might be different, from that set of data? That's a whole lot of work that may never get done. So let's at least get the raw data out there first and see what happens. This is really just the modern version, if you like, of, remember in the old days, the big deal was finding all the Tiger data, which was public, packaging it up, putting it into a box. And we know the guy who did this because he started Directions Magazine. His name was Scott Elliott.
That's right.
And that's what Wessex did.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
If you like, now that things are even opener, and we have this great thing called the internet that's blossomed in ways that he probably couldn't imagine when he started out, this is just the modern version of packaging it up and making it available, in this case, for free.
And that's a really great example to start with, because what I see happening in government is that they have more data than they know what to do with. And I would say that there are tons of applications that can be developed with the data that the government collects and pumps out. And so it's really up to the entrepreneur to figure out how to use it. How he gets it is maybe one of those issues. And I think, again, Krantz does a great job of discussing, if you were starting out as an entrepreneur looking to get data for whatever app you were building, these are the things you need to consider. I wanted to highlight one thing that in one of the comments Steve Romaleski made from City University of New York. And I quote, "I know that many app developers like APIs because they only need and want to access the data via code. In those cases, accessing data via an API is so much cleaner, easier, etc., than handling the raw files. But there are so many other people who need the actual data files to clean, manipulate, analyze, and integrate into other projects, and they don't want to have to access the data programmatically." What Steve did there was lay out the case for both issues, but it sort of brings to mind the whole fact that it really depends on what you want to use the data for.
Right, and I think it's worth mentioning, too, that as we move forward, here we are in 2012, and I like to think that anybody with a single GIS course behind them could figure out how to grab that KML file and view it in Google Maps, or similarly could grab that shapefile and view it in ArcGIS Online, or take that CSV file and maybe use it in Fusion Tables or something.
Fusion Tables, yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we've got some tools now. So more and more of that burden is going back to the individual who's asking the question, be they a developer or be they a student, and to be able to take advantage of that raw data. There's two other cases that I want to discuss, too, that I think help illustrate the challenges here. And one is the National Broadband Map. And that does have an API. And I was recently at a talk by Michael Byrne, who's the GIO for the FCC. And when they launched the API, some really interesting things started happening. One of them was that they saw some folks explicitly grabbing data state by state. And they also saw some people explicitly grabbing data following along the lines of latitude. And so my question back to him was, why are they doing this if they can download all the data? And his response to me was, well, for them, it was probably faster. And this was a situation where they had both an API and the data for download, and the developers were taking advantage of the API because it was there, I guess.
Mm.
The other thing that he highlighted, and it was also brought up in some of the comments, was if you have an API, you have a real window into exactly how the data is being used, what calls are being made, when they're being made, which organizations are using the data a lot versus less, and so forth. So you get all that feedback. And that, I would argue, is part of why Google made the change to switch over from having access to its Google Maps API be free to all to be less free if you use a lot of access to the API.
Yeah, well, that to me was more of a business decision, I think, because they saw that more of the data was being used. And isn't that some of the issue that was brought up in Krantz's article, is that given the right application, somebody's going to use it and maybe using it to a severe extent that they're going to bring down the servers.
That point is equally valid whether you're a government or you're a commercial entity.
Right, right.
So, even though this discussion was actually framed for open data from government, I think it makes a lot of really good points for the commercial sector as well.
Right, hence the reason why Google changed that policy. What you essentially have is a development of a business model, not just a technical framework from which to access the data. And you could make that argument now that APIs would suit the commercial entity a little bit more because then they can more or less refine or constrict the application to what will best suit their business needs.
Right. You get that sort of tracking, and you can throttle people if they use more than they said. You can charge them more money and so forth. But by the same token, you could certainly charge them every time they download, too.
And therein lies the challenge for the business model. I think of it there once you just said that is, does it put more emphasis on the quality and quantity of the data or how the data is manipulated through an API?
Right. What is the value add of the API?
Mm-hmm, right.
And in a sense, we're revisiting that same situation from years ago where it was about packaging the data and enhancing the Tiger data. Remember, all kinds of companies were doing that.
So the APIs really do nothing more than repackage the data in the way that the developer wants them to be used.
If you like, that is a way to describe an API. And we're seeing this whole issue being reborn in the context of Google's decision with OpenStreetMap. Now, OpenStreetMap people think of as a software project, and so far as I'm concerned, it's a data project. It makes a giant database. And it has some very strict restrictions if you want to use the tiles directly from OpenStreetMap. And they really don't want you to do that because they have very limited server power and so forth. So what they want you to do is to download the tiles and put up your own tile server. If you don't want to do that, you can access via an API some tiles from MapQuest. They make OpenStreetMap data tiles available. Or you can pay for a service like Mapbox, which also makes those tiles available. So in a sense, we've sort of come full circle to the data as a download, take the data, turn it back into a service, and then sell the service. So it sounds like we're going to be discussing the best ways to make data and geodata available, whether by download or via API, for some time. We thought that Peter Krantz's article really shed a lot of light on what the options were and what the challenges were. That's all the time we have for today.
This podcast is brought to you by Intergraph, providers of GeoMedia and Erdos Imagine. Dynamically jumpstart your GIS. Discover the power of geography and build a smarter organization with GeoMedia Smart Client. Leverage advanced geospatial functionality via simple-to-use, map-based tools to streamline your processes and hone your expertise to build a smart GIS. To learn more, visit intergraph.com/geospatial.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag or leave us a tweet @directionsmag. Or you can leave a comment where this podcast is hosted at directionsmag.com.
And from us here at Directions, we'd like to invite you to join us for our special webinar today, Jobs in the Geospatial Intelligence and GeoInt Tradecraft. You can find out more information at directionsmag.com/webinars.
Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.